Welcome back to Commerce Experience. I'm your host, Brian Walker, Chief Strategy Officer at Bloomreach. Today, we're looking at mobile commerce and mobile apps. Recently, it was the 15th anniversary of Apple releasing the iPhone. And of course, essentially, everything changed for e-commerce and digital marketing when that happened. And it's had a massive impact on our culture, on how we are entertained, and of course, how we shop and get service and communicate. Today's guest is Matt Hudson. Matt is a very experienced app developer with a focus on retail, including having developed the app for Belk, a US-based retail chain with over 300 locations. Belk's won awards for their mobile apps, and certainly Matt has a keen understanding and interest in how mobile impacts retail shopper journeys and how retailers and brands should think about mobile app development in order to make it sustainable and in order to make it profitable. Please enjoy the show. Thank you very much. Matt, thank you so much for joining us here today. In a show of solidarity, I think I will do this.
I love it. The shark fin is peeking through.
During COVID, I let my hair grow out, you know, it's just like getting really long. And it was like kind of Italian-ish kind of thing I was trying to do. And then all of a sudden I was like, I need a haircut. And so I told my wife, like, you know what? I think this is probably one of the few opportunities I have to do a mohawk.
Yeah, I love it.
And I loved it. Oh my God, that was fun.
I did it on a dare and it has become an icon. My kids think it's hilarious and everything.
Yeah. And I just loved it. It was so much fun. So yeah, we'll do that today. All right. All wonderful. Right. Thanks so much for your time and for joining us here today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So Matt, we're going to start with the first question we always ask every guest here on the podcast. You know, what was the first job or role that you had in digital or e-commerce?
So that's an interesting question because my story is kind of long and arduous, but I started programming when I was 12 years old. I sold my first website when I was 18 to my chiropractor. And so I considered that the beginning of my professional career because I called my dad and I said, Dad, what do I charge my chiropractor, you know, for this website? And this was 1998, which for those of you who are counting, that's 24 long years ago, which doesn't seem that long ago, but to me at least.
Well, it depends. And sometimes it does seem like a long time ago.
Yeah, no, that's fair. It does. It's just when I think of 1998, I think of like, I mean, I was ready to go at that time and it didn't feel like I was living in the dark ages, but I guess we were. And 1999 was around the corner. And anyway, so I said, Dad, what do I charge this guy? And he said, well, charge him what you want. And so I said, well, I need rent. And at the time, my rent was $500, also a product of the long time ago. And he cut me a check. And I said, well, I'm going to do this for a long time. So I eventually went to a digital agency. They worked on Walmart. I got into e-commerce, I would say, around that time where I was working on Sam's Club projects with Rockfish. And then I got into retail, the way we think of it now, about 8 years ago after I worked on Charles Schwab and came to Belk. So
when did you first, because you know that we are kind of focusing here on mobile, when did you start first working on sort of mobile experiences and you know, how to start developing those?
Well, at that agency I mentioned to you, we were ahead of the curve, right? I mean, agencies are often like that. Their job is to know technology, and most of us were technologists obsessed with it. So when iPhone came out, I mean, we were psyched about it. I mean, even when G Phone, right, predecessor to Android, came out, we were excited. Not as much, but iPhone had such a huge following and changed the game in so many different ways, whether it's the affluent customers who were buying it. It was an icon at the time. And then when the App Store came out, we knew absolutely as an agency that we were going to do apps. So I built my first app on iOS 3.3. And of course, that's really when mobile web became important. WAP was there before and some of the older technologies, but none of those anybody ever cared about. I mean, we were interested in them just to see what they would do. And of course, you know, Nokia had its operating system and stuff, but you know, iPhone changed it, made it for everybody. And so, yeah, I built my first app. It got rejected from the App Store, which was great. I got a call from Apple saying, hey, we can't let you have this app in the App Store. But I was off and running. As soon as people found out I could build apps, I started building all kinds of different mobile solutions.
We're literally recording this just after the 15th anniversary of Apple launching the iPhone.
Oh, yeah, that's correct. You
know,
yeah.
That just happened. And I thought it was kind of interesting, you know, reading some of the interviews with some of the early Apple iPhone product managers and so on that sort of came out around the anniversary. And it was kind of funny. One of them said, well, we thought people might want to send messages to each other. and we thought it was kind of cool that we were mashing up this iPod with a phone and stuff. But even Apple didn't really understand the impact it would ultimately have. Maybe Jobs did, but a lot of people, even inside Apple, didn't quite envision the impact it really would ultimately have. And of course, for e-commerce and digital marketing, it's had a massive, massive, of course, impact, as well as in the culture and the economy as a whole. So pretty interesting.
You say Steve Jobs, you know, in his book, he talked a bit about it. And there was an argument over whether they would have an app store or if they would control the ecosystem with only certain providers. And I always thought that was interesting. Like, how could you not release it? So yeah, I agree with you. Steve Jobs even didn't quite know. And he did think it was cool and et cetera. But even the mobile web aspect, not just the app aspect, I think was changed by the paradigms of pinch and zoom, and the mobile experience was enabled by the high resolution screens. And yeah, you're right. They had no idea, I don't think, how big it was, but it certainly changed my life. So
yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, kind of go a little bit higher level question. You obviously have tons of experience in mobile app development, and in particular around retail. And I'm kind of just interested in your point of view and some of the unexpected ways you've seen retailers take advantage of this beyond just like a basic storefront or basic mobile web. But as you think about app development, what are some of the things that you think are kind of interesting that you've seen over the recent past around mobile app development?
So I think it was an interesting question. I thought about this a lot because the tricky part is the unexpected. You know, for me as a technologist, I feel like I'm always thinking about what's next, and I'm always looking at what's next. So for me, I don't know if they're unexpected, but it was a welcome addition to what people are doing. So things like buy online, pick up in store, and curbside pickup. Now, the pandemic accelerated it to a million times, right? And even same day delivery over buy online, pickup in store kind of solutions, I think are fascinating, not just in that, you know, you're giving Uber drivers, quote unquote, the ability to pick something up and deliver it to people, but also just being able to pick things up quickly from the store. You know, and it's not always great, but the combination of the store and the e-commerce experience together, I think, is really important. You know, for years we talked about omnichannel, and I always thought of it as mobile enabled omnichannel, because why do you need omnichannel if you're not letting people take it with them, right? Like, the portability of the phone itself is what to me made omnichannel important. But it seems like mobile app got lost in that, and mobile web is, I wouldn't say lost, it's still a first class citizen. But some of the interesting things people have done are all centered around the integration to the store, store pricing, QR codes. All of those things are really cool. And so I think a lot of things are coming around the corner as customers get more used to the concept of having a mobile app or even a high-end mobile web experience. So geolocation, I think, is a big one. You know, what are we going to do with that information in regard to driving people to the store or giving them personalized experience based on not geolocation, but also the things that they're doing on their phone without eliminating privacy? Those, to me, are the best parts, is the combinations of store. You saw what Cartwheel did with Target, which was a really interesting experience. And now they built their whole app experience around Cartwheel, which is centered around the store and loyalty and promotions.
Yeah, absolutely. And the way I've often thought about apps and mobile as well is not just kind of an extension of your e-commerce strategy, but as you pointed out, right, this is now a tool for customers to research and learn about the products, do social proof around products while they're in stores, et cetera. And obviously, that then starts to drive some really interesting ways in which mobile plays a role in the store. It used to be that people would walk into stores with website product detail page printouts, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, that's not necessarily the case anymore. They may have, though, built a cart or a wish list, and now they're walking into the store and they're trying to quickly find it, or they're searching again on their phone. And then they're, you know, using that tool in addition to, especially for a high consideration purchase, they're using that in combination with being there in person. And then, you know, what I think is kind of funny, and you know, I sort of do this sometimes, not really intentionally, not really maliciously, but start quizzing the sales associate about the product. And here I am standing there with my phone, and I say, how many whatever, you know, this, or what is the spec on that? And I'm like, what am I doing here? Like quizzing the sales associate on how enabled they are. But in a way, like I'm asking, in a sense, really more of like, what else do I need to know about this product? And so it's raised the bar as well. Now, a lot of retail experiences, the sales associates have probably given up and do the same thing and pull out their phone.
Well, and they're running on thin teams too, right? The stores are running on thin teams.
Absolutely. And so that, exactly. And so now you've got the situation where the store environments are kind of pivoting to, hey, it's kind of a self-service experience. We're here to kind of facilitate, but we're not necessarily, expectation on the sales associate is different now, in part because also the customer has the phone in their pocket. And
when you think about where you're going, think about 5 years ago, they started talking about showrooming, where people are going in and look, inventories are thin. Everybody is experiencing the same thing economically. And your online, your warehouse availability online is always there. You're always going to be able to save the sale. And the customer not only is getting information that they need, but also being able to buy those products. And so I think that's a huge win for customers, for retailers, if they truly make an omnichannel experience and see it as one store, whether it's online or app or mobile web or desktop or whatever, and just a different use case for each one, then they'll take those advantages and be able to not miss sales. I can't tell you how many times people just simply don't have a particular size in stock. I mean, every consumer has experienced it, but I think it goes underappreciated in retail that, you know, we don't quantify how many times somebody comes in to buy something and we don't have it. For one, we don't know. Yet in my business college graduate degree, or not graduate degree, undergraduate degree, excuse me, before I upgrade myself, before I just...
Yeah, because somebody
would have checked me. But University of Arkansas, class of 2000-something, I don't even remember at this point. But, you know, one of the things we learned about is you should always try to have one item left in stock, right? Like your goal at the capstone class was to have one item always at any time. And we don't quantify how many times somebody doesn't have something available. Mm-hmm. As a weird sized person, an oddly shaped person, as I call it, I experience this all the time. I'm a size 13 shoe. Well, 12 is the most common size. So I'm right there on the edge. So I'm constantly having to try something on in the store and then buy it online. And I think once people realize that there's many different ways to achieve that and give customers what they want, they'll find that their most loyal customers are the ones that can buy what they want, when they want, where they want it, in the fastest, easiest way possible with the least issues.
Yeah, absolutely.
Seems obvious, but it's not as obvious as you might
absolutely
think.
Absolutely. And as I've always said, you know, your goal, right, whether it's online or in a store environment, is to help the customer buy with confidence. And these digital tools now provide a phenomenal way to support that. And then the store environment needs to complement that. So pivoting a little bit here, in your opinion, right, you've got a lot of experience talking to various retailers and brands about this question. How does a business decide if a mobile app is right for them?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's a question that a lot of companies ask themselves, because if you look at Forrester research in 2020, which is, things have changed even more accelerated in this direction, you know, 80% of companies want an app. But yet, if you look at the top 200, let's say Salesforce Commerce Cloud companies, only 40 of them have an app. And a lot of them are not the quality that a customer who wants an app needs. So there's a couple of easy ways to do it. High frequency, you know, revisits, which is loyal customer. So if you have a store where people come back to it pretty often. If you've got a number of stores, those are both really great ways. If you have a loyalty program, I think Starbucks has set the standard that if you have a loyalty program, you must have an app. If you have a 40 or 50 and below customer, they're starting to want apps first. I challenge people a lot on this mobile web question, but then I ask them a simple question of, do you use Facebook's mobile web? No, you don't. Why? Facebook's mobile web is almost exactly the same as their mobile app. Or Instagram. Does Instagram even have a website? They do, but most people don't even realize that they
do. Well, it's a really poor experience, actually.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. That's true, too, because it's just the images, because people don't use it. Mm-hmm. But the question is, you know, you've got a lot of products, you've got a lot of SKUs, you've got a repeat customer, you got somebody who wants to come back to you, a loyal customer. Yes, it's not 100% of your customers, right? Some customers may only come visit you one time a year, or maybe one time ever. If you've got one SKU, sure, you don't need an app. But I would argue that if you've got a loyalty program, you got a number of stores, you probably need an app.
Yeah, I think that if you need to, if you're not a high frequency purchase business like grocery or mass market, where, you know, there's a high likelihood that customers ordering from you once a week, twice a week, a few times a month, what have you, like those would all count as certainly high frequency. The customer's going to remember they have the app. They're going to be able to find it on their phone, all those kind of things. Obviously, if the customer's ordering from you once a year or once every other year, you need to give them other reasons why the app matters. Now you've got an increasing number of products that are connected to the web, and your phone and the app may actually be a way to interact with that product. And so then all of a sudden you have a very good reason to have an app and for the customer to interact with it. And certainly commerce and marketing can also be integrated into that experience in a way that is customer centric and supports what the customer wants and what your product does for them. And then all of a sudden, of course, an app makes sense, right? And so
what you said there is really important. I think what you said there is really important, though, which is, you know, if you think about web and customers getting to know you, it's kind of like dating. You know, they're buying from you. They're maybe they subscribe to your email. They're trying to warm up to you. They like you. They're buying more and more. An app is kind of like almost being married, right? It's like somebody has decided they really like you. They went and downloaded your app to where they know they're going to come back. And we've escalated the situation to where now you have a relationship. And I've always considered the mobile app more like a relationship, right? Where, sure, messaging them over email and stuff like that is important. Everybody knows email is important. But if you look at what more and more companies are doing is driving people to the app because they know that it's a start of a relationship. It's a new channel to message customers. It's an easy way to get them to come back. And once they have it, they're way more likely to come back because it's faster and easier to use. But you're right. Not every customer is going to do it. Not every, but your best and most premium customers. And the data plays out, by the way. AOV, 30% higher, 20 to 30% higher. Your conversion, if it's faster and a better experience and built in ways Apple and Google suggest, right, which is completely different from mobile web, then you're going to see an increase in conversion. Some companies, 0.5% higher in conversion. And by the way, the Belk app, it has more 50-plus-year-old customers than below 18 to 24. Now, that's mind-blowing because a lot of people think, oh, it's got to, it's, you only need it if it's a young customer. That's not true.
No, it's not true at all. That's not true at all. The older consumer who's a loyal consumer, they're on Facebook. They're using the Facebook app. You know, they might park that Belk app right next to it, right? It's like,
absolutely. Yep,
that's how they're thinking. And they're very well adept now, almost all of them, right? Even the metaverse research shows that the older consumers are the ones who are actually most kind of curious, which is really interesting, right? It's like, okay, that doesn't seem like it makes sense based on the media and the meme and everything, right? But
if my grandma walks around with some VR goggles, yeah,
I'm not saying they're in VR, but they all remember the promise of Second Life and really thought that was a cool idea, and it just didn't pan out.
True.
Okay, so pivoting a little bit to the cost of not only building but also maintaining. Can you speak to maybe a few of the factors that are contributing to that and how businesses can think about reducing the impact and or how they should really think about that? Because I think it's unfortunate perhaps, but there were a lot of apps built at different points in time that didn't get the evolution they really needed, didn't get the ongoing investment. It was a burden. It was overhead. And a lot of businesses are like, we're just going to do mobile web because it's an extension.
There's two things about this. I want to talk about both sides, costs and the benefits, because they're important. So one of the things that I realized a couple years ago was that the barrier to entry was way too high. And a big part of that is iOS and Android taking up an enormous amount of space each, right? Android in particular, the costing associated with it is high. So the engineering portion is a big part of the barrier to entry, but I want to talk about the benefit piece too, which you touched on, which is tying your marketing to it. So some apps didn't get the evolution that they needed, in my opinion, because they didn't put their marketing towards their app. If your marketing always opens your mobile web, right, which a lot of people will see as mobile got more ubiquitous, you started seeing emails like 60, 70% of emails are opened on mobile web. Well, if they open mobile web and not app, of course your app's not going to do well. And if you don't build a great app that understands that persistent login, right, not making a user enter password, giving them the fastest experience, this is something I'm very passionate about, which is the speed is the most important piece. So how do you do that in a way that is cost effective? Build an app that's fast, that gives customers what they want. Well, the trick is to me a shared front end, right? Now, it's not mobile web inside of your app. If you do that, you might as well throw that app in the trash, okay? For one, it just means you're in the channel and that's it, right? And you're just giving them a mediocre experience. But the true advantage of app is the mobile app paradigms that Apple and the Human Interface Guidelines and Google and Material Design Guidelines have given. Giving customers what they expect in a fast way. So a native solution using something like React Native or Native is the best option to save costs. If you have a killer content management system, React Native solution, if you put the right engineers in place and you share the costs across your team, you'll get the costs down where they want. Some of the solutions that I've built are cross-platform, and that allows us to deliver things in 4 weeks per release instead of 6 weeks per release. I mentioned a content management system that's important. And then the benefit piece is also important because you can have a great and fast app, but if people don't download it or if they don't open it, even though they have it, you're not going to do that well. So tying in universal links from email to open up app, tying in your ads to open up app, that's where you get the big wins. Belk started seeing real traction in their conversion and penetration when we tied email to app and then we tied Google PLAs to app. You tie all that marketing to app, suddenly every customer who already has the app is opening it and using it where they want to use it. If they already have the app, opening the app makes sense because that's what they prefer since they obviously downloaded it. Opening mobile web when you have an app doesn't make any sense. So tying the marketing in it is where the benefit comes. Making it cross-platform is where you decrease the cost. And I will tell you that from my perspective, I think you can cut your costs in half from what normal setups are if you spread the work across the team and the entire team is addressing mobile app instead of just web team and app team.
That's a really interesting point. You know, so basically integrate it into everything you're doing. Versus Absolutely. Have like one or two people over here who are the app guys.
You exactly. Know? Yeah. Having them on an island is a problematic organizationally, not only because they're working on separate technology, some are more expensive than others. You're maintaining a whole parallel system that is going to have to grow from zero to 60. Whereas if everybody's bought in, you share the cost, you share the understanding, you share the knowledge of it. Your support team should be supporting your mobile app just like it supports your mobile web. And by the way, that's how your customer sees it. They don't see you as an app team and a web team. They just see you as one team.
Well, they see you as one business, one brand, right? They don't even, the lines are blurred between digital as a whole and stores and all the rest of it we've talked about. Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And then you touched on, I think, a really interesting point, right? Which is the degree to which you can leverage your back-end infrastructure, whether that's commerce platform, content management system, personalization, search, all these different things, right? These are APIs now. You're gonna call those APIs from your website. You're gonna call those APIs from your app. You know, there's some things you may want to be caching, but nonetheless, that's a way to really streamline the back end so there's not also more merchandising and marketing overhead on the business side to support these experiences as well. And if you can do it that way, well, this has now become a really key channel, again, not just for driving the sales, but also to support the customer journey and drive that Absolutely. More loyal customer
The customers
experience.
Who want your app, who don't want to log in every time, who want to get push notifications sometimes, who want that geofence push notification or the very fast payment or Apple Pay, Google Pay, all of those things. I look at it like this. When my daughter was born, I was triaging mobile web at night. She would stay up crying and you know, she's a very emotional girl and I love her so much, but she's definitely me, right? Very intense person. And I'd be rocking her and I'd be QAing the mobile web or app. And I realized that if a customer can't check out real fast with one thumb holding a child or standing in line at Starbucks in those mobile moments, then it's not good enough. You're not delivering what you need. And, you know, the customer sees that all in one place. The app customer needs app because they are running around working hard. They have kids, two families working. I found an enormous amount of purpose in my life as an engineer selling things in retail by realizing that I can make people's lives, I know it sounds a little ridiculous, but make people's lives a little better by single moms out there or parents like me who are holding my children, you know, taking care of them, being able to buy what they need to buy for the kids, for school, whatever it is, quickly and easily. It's one less frustration. You know, how many times have we forgot my password and I can't buy something I need to buy for my kids, you know, that is coming up or swim class coming up or whatever, you know, and I can't do it. You eliminate that frustration. And if you understand it that way, your customers will buy and they will be loyal and they will, but an app is a great way to give that to them.
Totally agree. And I used to tell a story about being a dad as well. And my kids were older at this point, but I think it was like back to school time, or I think school had already started. And my daughter, we were like at dinner or whatever. And she was saying like, my backpack isn't working. You know, my backpack doesn't work for me, like super uncomfortable. It was too big. All these, you know, just kind of like, nah, 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 nah. So like while she's talking, right, I'm on Amazon's mobile app and I'm like, how do you think this one will work? She goes, that'll work perfect. Done. I just solved the problem. I didn't have to go anywhere. I didn't have to do anything. It was super fast, super easy. And yeah, it was similar in some respects. And I love the way you kind of personalize that and humanize the experience there, because I think that's exactly what everyone's dealing with. And that actually does get
especially
to the core.
Today.
That's right. Absolutely. And now it gets to the core of why this can actually be really useful and be a great business benefit, drive business at the same time.
It will drive business. I think if customers think about it in terms, retailers think about it in terms of, you know, findability, right? Speed, performance, those things are so undervalued. I mean, even UX to a degree, customers will naturally gravitate to the better experience where the products are easy to find, obviously with the best data, all of that stuff, you know, but speed and performance and not having the frustration of logging in. If you surveyed your customers and you asked them and you said, hey, you know, what's the easy experience? If you had app and web and you had all these out there, you'd find that they don't know why they gravitate to app, but a lot of times it's because the Apple guidelines and et cetera have made it easy to tap, easy to use, not having to log in, and it's always faster. I can't overstate how speed of search, speed of your product, and speed of checkout plays into whether or not people will buy from you, because they're often in a hurry. They're not sitting down like, oh, time to shop.
That's
you know,
right.
Like they're
not in between
doing
some other thing. I mean, we don't want this to be happening, but they might even be at a stoplight. You know, maybe that's a bad example.
They're in the passenger seat, Brian.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. They're in the past. That's correct. They're in the passenger seat, or they're on the subway, or they're waiting for a flight, or they are, you know,
in line at Starbucks.
They're in line at Starbucks. They're on the sidelines at a soccer game. They're trying to get dinner on the table. All these different things are happening. And what's the most convenient way for them to do that? It's picking up their phone.
Yeah. They will gravitate to app if you tie your marketing to it and give them a great experience. If you put mobile app first, which is, you know, unlikely to happen, but if you keep it in parallel with your mobile web, you give it the experience that they expect, like a Starbucks, Amazon, all the others, right? All the big ones out there, Target, Macy's, you know, all of those companies have realized it. That's why they're putting exclusive products, because they realize that app relationship is important, right? And that it converts better and that they're going to make more sales and they give the customer what they want, which is a delightful experience. When you don't have the when your whole life is frustrating every day, trying to work from home, trying to make meetings, trying to do all the things, you know, that you need to do, being able to do something that you should be able to do, which is give a retailer money, ought to be super easy. I ought to be able to do it with one thumb, click, 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 boom, done, and be out of there. Not frustrating experience. That's part of the reason why I talked about search, which, you know, Bloomreach is obviously great for, is that fast search is extremely important too. And so I can't underestimate how, or overstate that.
And even just to say fast is important, relevant is super important. Because now we're talking about like a very, very, you have like, you better get it right in the first or second slot.
Findability. Or, I call it findability. It ought to come up in the first set of results, right? Like, and by the way, that's part of fast too. The customer needs to be able to find what they need fast, whether it's IT side performance, you know, PWA on mobile web, mobile app, obviously experience, whatever, but also findability and being able to check out and pay fast, not just, obviously not just, you know, the actual speed of how fast everything downloads. As a technologist, obviously I care about that, but, you know, I don't want to be scrolling through products for 3 hours. You know, I want to get in there and get it bought and done.
That's right. I want to dive a little bit more into the sort of the technology here a little bit. What are the two or three things that you think Google or Apple should do to lower the burden to producing and maintaining apps? I'm sure there are things that you've been looking for, and it's not that I'm going to be able to understand from a technical perspective all of it. So I'm going to ask that you try to interpret that for me and the rest of the folks listening in. But I'd love to understand, what are those things that from a development perspective you wish were there to make this better? And do you think that those are coming?
I've expressed some of these to particularly Google, but Apple too. And first of all, these companies are handling it incrementally, right? And I definitely think that it's on their radar and it's important to them. But, you know, I don't know that they have a lot of other things on their plate, obviously. But I think deep linking is a big part of it. And giving customers the experience like the portability of web in an app experience. In other words, if I click on an email in an app, I need to be able to open that app up in the exact same location where I'm expecting it to. If I have to go download the app, it needs to open where I wanted it to open. Deep linking, I think, is one that is, I don't want to say easy to solve, but it's a no-brainer for them to solve. We already have universal links and app links on Google and Apple that allow us to do some of this stuff, but the implementation is pretty challenging. And then attribution. I think Apple and Google maybe underestimated, or maybe it's not necessarily in their model to care about the marketing attribution, right?
But it's a big issue. Yeah.
It's a huge issue where the ability to tie what channels are working, my last touch channels, to my mobile app, and then see which ones work, is an enormous benefit. That's a big part of how Belk grew its app 300% last year, 200% the year before, you know, and now it's a very significant portion of the business, and increase the conversion because those best customers live in the marketing channels. And the marketing team, once they saw that the app would open and convert better, they bought in. And now ads and marketing are starting to point to app, and your app customers getting what they want. Customers, by the way, that already have the app. A lot of companies think of, oh, we need to do a download campaign. No, you don't. If you have customers with the app, let them open the app. And by the way, your marketing still is tied to people that have the app as well, current customers. So I think that's a big one, is making it easier to attribute, whether it's Google's ads, Apple search ads, or all the other ad channels, and being able to send those down to the companies that are doing your, you know, performance marketing, I think is a huge one. And then just obviously more, you know, cross-platform opportunities, and they do a lot to make it easy to make a great experience. They do a ton of the heavy lifting for you. That's part of the reason why app can be great, is because they've done the heavy lifting. You mentioned VR, you know, Apple releasing their tools for AR and VR is a huge win. it's going to make things significantly different. So everything Apple does and Google does is moving in this direction. But I think tying the links into the app and allowing the content that lives in app to be created in a way that's similar to web is going to be very beneficial, because that conversion is a big part of the friction of having a mobile app and maintenance and things like that.
You brought up AR, and I personally think that that's the next big jump in mobile and app-based experiences. And, you know, I think that's going to be very, very interesting. And certainly the phone, I believe, is going to be the key to that. You know, it's got the camera and all the rest, and we all have one in our pocket or our handbag or what have you. And it's like, you know what? This is where it's going to play out. And I think there's going to be, in the next 5 years, quite a evolution in how customers think about that and how comfortable they are with it and looking for that. Today, it's sort of like QR codes were 10 years ago. Yeah, you know, they were there, but not very many people understood what they were or how to interact with them. And now, of course, almost every week we're having a couple of experiences where we're ordering off a mobile menu or something like that. And so QR codes have become very much woven into every consumer's life, and they understand them and they look for them and they know what's going to happen when they click on them and they know how to do that. And so now it's just become woven into our digital convergence. And I think AR is going to get there, but we'll see what the timeline is. But I do think that that will then even increase the opportunity. And I think it make it even more important for businesses to really think about their mobile app experiences, because now it's a yet another immersive way to, again, help the customer understand and research the products, get immersed in a brand experience, and then buy with confidence. You know,
you're seeing companies do it, right? Like Overstock has had a AR experience for a long time, and Wayfair has a, I'm just going to be honest, it's a very poor experience, but these companies are aware of it, and it's expensive. The modeling is expensive. I think the modeling is a big part of making it, when I say modeling, making it look real is a big piece. I built my first AR experience probably 10 years ago, and it was for furniture. And is it 10 years, 8, 2009, 10, whenever it was, 10 years ago, something like that. And before Apple had really kind of upped their game, you know, and you could scan a code and that code would show, you know, a 3D model. And the 3D models were okay, and, you know, but not great. But furniture was a big one because people want to know, can it fit? So I think the first thing is you got to find utility. It's got to look real. It's got to be useful. They're not going to do it just for the novelty. It's like Apple TV. Apple TV, you could shop on Apple TV. Well, it's not that useful, right? Like, I'm not going to shop on my TV. I love the concept as a technologist, like, but so it's got to be useful. So like, try on hard goods, I think, is interesting. There's an SDK called Viking that I had never even heard of, and their shoe try on is really good. They're a small company, as far as I can tell, at least. And their shoe try-on was really excellent. I was like, wow, this could actually do something. Glasses. Hard goods, I think, is interesting. Purses. You know, apparel is tricky because, A, people want to feel it. I mentioned I'm an oddly shaped body. I want to feel what it's like. But once you get used to a brand, it becomes better. The other thing is the lighting is weird. The color's weird. People have trouble with photos. As it is, maintaining all perfectly accurate photos that when they get delivered, the colors are correct. So I think that's the challenge of AR and VR, is not just putting a shopping experience there, but putting one that's really useful, that's realistic. Glasses, shoes, hard goods, I think, yeah, absolutely. Furniture, you almost have to have one at this point because so many companies are doing it out there and making it easy to see something in a room. Nobody has gotten paint correct. The paint companies have been trying to paint your room for 100 years, and they still cannot seem to get it to where it's useful. Once it's really useful and not just novelty, then I think it will become important. And I think that was true for app 10 years ago when we were making, you know, marketing type apps that were useless. Now they're useful. Now we can tie the marketing into them. AR and VR is the same.
Yeah, fully agree. Yeah, I was playing around with 3D models. Can't even remember the name of the company now, but I was playing around with them way back in the day, early 2000s. They were very expensive, obviously, to create. You had to have a plugin, It was obviously browser based. It was Flash. Like, you know, and we were just kind of playing around with it. We would do things like watches and things like this. They were interesting, but at the time it was like, of course, the barriers for a customer, not only not, you know, knowing what to expect and like to click through, but then to have a plugin and all that, like, of course it didn't work. Right. So it has to be really seamless. And yeah, the fidelity has to improve. There will be product categories where it becomes very critical, as you already mentioned. And there'll be product categories where it just doesn't really solve the use case. And frankly, all of the effort and money and time that has been spent trying to do virtual modeling for apparel, I remain pretty skeptical about how effective that's going to be. But there's other categories where it absolutely makes sense. And then, of course, with VR, on top of that, there's going to be product categories where, yeah, an immersive VR experience, trying out what it could be like to drive that car around, could be like interesting part of the buyer journey. But that's, you know, that's also kind of
the immersive part's important. That's why I think apparel's tricky, because immersion, whether it's 3D movies or whatever, that you mentioned the car, like car would be killer way to sort of experience something, but it's got to be real. And, you know, and again, it's more of like a showroom than a buying experience. And so it will be interesting. I mean, companies are bought in. Well, I should say the big FANG type of companies are bought in, and we'll see what they do. You know, as usual, they'll probably lead the pack and we'll learn from their learnings, and then we'll take it on. I think the data piece is one that's interesting, though. Because if you want to try on clothes in particular, you know, a woman's dress has something like 7 different sizes, right? And the accuracy of the data in a lot of these companies is pretty thin. And being able to make that data into an accurate model that people will trust to try on.
Super difficult.
It's going to be hard.
And, you know, even in production, right? Apparel is, there's variances that make it really tricky. Even if you say, oh, a size 6 is a this, well, guess what? Every dress that has the 6 in it will actually be a little bit different. So,
well, and you know, then you have vanity sizing on top of that where, yeah. So you know, it's super, like for big difficult people, problem. You know,
yeah, yeah, super exactly. Difficult problem. And I also just don't know if that's really what the customer wants, honestly, at the end of the day, right? If it really solves the problems. Okay. So last question, and that would be connected to what we were just talking about in a way, but since you already went through AR, VR, we're going to have to say, oh, sorry, not eligible for the answer to this question. No, okay. Just kidding. What is the future sort of commerce and or digital marketing innovation that you're either most looking forward to or you think is just an unmitigated failure and you wish we would stop talking about it? And I'm not going to ask you to speak specifically to mobile. You can speak to anything if you'd like.
Unmitigated failure. That's a hard one. So let's talk about the one that is hands down easy, no-brainer for me. It's app clips. Instant apps and app clips. Instant apps have been around for a while, but as usual, Apple getting into the game makes a significant difference. App clip is where I can scan a QR code or I can click a special link or I can use an NFC poster and it pops up an app experience without downloading the app. I think that barrier to entry is a common reason retailers in particular, but even some other companies don't get into app is because they think, well, somebody has to download it and that's too much trouble. Well, that trouble has value, but also making it easier to get to the app-like experience is great. And so you ask yourself, well, what's the difference between that and mobile web? Well, easy, because again, I can send them push notifications. It's faster. It's using the Apple and Google guidelines. And so I see save the sale as the biggest no-brainer of all, which is go to the store, scan a QR code or a barcode or however I'd like to do it, pops up my miniature app clip experience, and then I buy, right? I buy with Apple Pay, I buy with PayPal or, you know, my saved credit card or whatever. And then I can go download the app later. And I've got 10 days to push notify that person. I think that's a game changer because more and more as inventories become like this and experiences kind of level out, people will want to be able to go into a store, quickly grab a QR code and buy their size. And to me, everybody should be on board with this. You know, you got to be willing to obviously get behind it, but QR codes have made their way. And app clips, I think, is going to change a lot of things. I just think as a customer, I want to be able to go into a store, feel what something feels like, touch it, and then buy my size and trust that it's going to be delivered to my place. I think that's probably the future. Gigantic stores and doing all the shopping and inventory. I don't know if it's the future, but unmitigated failure.
Well, you don't have to answer both. You can unless you have one. Nope. I don't have a great one because
I think you can make an argument that everything has carved its little niche, right?
But you don't need to answer. So. It was an or. Sorry. Okay, Matt. Fair. Fantastic conversation. Really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for being on. I really, really appreciate it. I think I do need to work on my mohawk.
Hey, it looks good. You know, and originally I wanted mine to be silver. So you got the silver part down. Get some gel in there, and we're gonna be good. We're gonna be good. Thank you so much for having me, though. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And to all the listeners out there, hit the page where we host these, the landing page where we host the podcast on the Bloomreach side. You'll see how to get in touch with Matt and so forth. And meanwhile,
please do, by the way, anybody got questions, mobile app needs, whatever. I'm here to answer questions or help out.
Yeah. Meanwhile, to all of you out there, be safe, be well. Here's the good business.
Here's the good business. Have a great day.